Beasley Media Group, BMI, and HD Radio present 100 years of radio, 100 years of hit makers, where we celebrate a century of hits written by some of the greatest songwriters of all time.
Hey, I'm Brian Ass, Managing Editor of Beasley Media, and I'm hosting a series of interviews with some of hip-hop's best songwriter producers, and we're digging deep talking about some of their biggest songs. This week we've got Tiara Thomas, and she's someone whose name you might not know, but she's written some pretty awesome songs. She worked with her on Slide and I Can't Breathe, and one of her first songs was Bad by Wale, and she talks about all of that in this interview, so let's just get into it.
Well, I got five, you know it's so live. Tell me when to go, baby, when we gon' slide, baby, when we gon' slide.
So, Tiara, talk to us about writing Slide.
Well, with Slide, that actually... We were in New York when we did that song, and it was kind of funny because it was me, her, and another artist, songwriter that goes by the name of Loner, and then the producer is Cardio. But we were looking for kind of like a more upbeat song, you know, with a bounce for her, because, you know, a lot of her songs are, you know, very chilled out and mellow. So we really wanted to try to get something that was like, you know, upbeat and that had kind of like this West Coast bounce to it. So Cardo, the producer, created the track there. And then we all agreed that, you know, we loved the track, you know, what the beat sounded like. And so me, Loner, and her kind of sat in a circle, or just, you know, kept getting up and moving in various places, sitting around the room, and we're just piecing together this song literally lyric by lyric. Like, somebody comes up with a dope, you know, a fly line, and they say it, and we're like, okay, I like that line. It kind of took us a long time, actually. We're all kind of used to writing mellow songs, and so we wanted it to sound, you know, we wanted it to be cool and hip and everything. So yeah, we just kind of pieced our brains together, and we all came up with different cool lines and melodies and stuff like that. And we just kind of, I'm not really sure how long it took us. I'm thinking maybe like, I don't know, like 8 hours or something like that. But we were really happy with the way it came out. And so, yeah, it was a fun process. It was really fun. It's a fun song.
And so 8 hours is fast or slow by your standards?
Well, let's see. So 8 hours. Well, I did a song with her called Lost Souls.
Right.
And it's a rap song. And it's the only song that she has where she's rapping on. So that song took a really long time, just because, I mean, we just wanted the lyrics to be perfect, and we wanted it to make sense. You know, we didn't just want to be saying a bunch of stuff that rhymed. We wanted it to be, you know, making sense and like spitting a lot of truth. So that song took a lot longer than 8 hours. So I say 8 hours is pretty, you know, I've written a song in an hour before.
Mm.
And I've written song, you know, in 30 minutes before. And I've, you know, it's taken me several times 8 hours to write a song, which I really don't mind that, because, I mean, I try not to rush the songwriting process. You know, I think a lot of people feel like, especially when they're in the studio, you know, like a nice studio where you booked out studio time, you feel like you a lot of pressure to, you know, get something done really quickly. And for me, I like to really take my time with words, with my lyrics, because that's a big thing for me. I'm really big on lyrics and how they make people feel. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out a way to say something that I haven't heard, you know, a bunch of other people say it. And so, you know, I'm trying to be really creative with my words. So sometimes it just takes like a little bit longer. So 8 hours, I don't think that's like an incredibly long time. Actually, you know, I think that's pretty regular.
I mean, I've heard varying things. You know, some songwriters are like, if I can't finish it in 3 hours, it's not good. And other
exactly.
people, you know, take months or even years, and they just keep going back to that song that they, you know, they never finished that time or whatever.
I do it all the time.
I mean, I feel like a lot of songwriters, particularly the ones who write on guitars and pianos and stuff, might keep a recording of a riff or a line or something. And if it doesn't work for this album, maybe they'll go back to it next album.
Yeah, I've got so many just like unreleased songs, and I think every artist and songwriter alive does this. We have like a bunch of songs that's like a first verse and a hook, And like, then you move on to the next thing, because it kind of like, it kind of kills your vibe when you're, when you feel like, I have to do this. I have to get this song done. I have to come up with this idea, because it kind of like, you know, moves into the creativity and the fun of it all. And then it starts to feel like a chore.
Right.
And then that's when it becomes like not good. So I think that's why you say some people are like, yo, if it's, you know, if I don't get it done in 3 hours, it's not good. Cause then at, you know, you feel like you're thinking really hard about it. And that's not, you know, I don't feel like, for me personally, I don't get the best result. Like working on a song, like I'm doing homework, you know?
Although I'm sure if somebody, you know, a director of a film said, hey, we need you to do a theme song for us and we need it like by Thursday, you'd probably
I'll figure it out. I'm gonna do that like homework. Yeah, I'll do that like, I'll definitely do that like homework. But I can't remember what song it was, but Kanye, I think it took him like, I can't remember what verse it was. It was a song that had other rappers on it, but it said he said he took him 3 months to write that verse. You know, I know a lot of people, especially like, you know, rappers, they write a verse, they don't like the verse, and they'll like rewrite the verse so many times, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure with Kanye, I mean, he's such a, or what, I'm sure he still is such a perfectionist. I wonder if that was Monster, just because he had to go up against Jay-Z and that Nicki verse and everything.
I know it was a song that had other rappers on there.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that might have been one of the songs. That might have been a song. But yeah, he said it took him like 3 months to write. I'm like, yo, I believe that. That sounds very
interesting. So when you're writing with her, what, you know, I'm picturing in my mind you two guys sitting in a room with acoustic guitars, which isn't the way everybody does it anymore these days. Do you write melodies? Do you write chords? Do you write lyrics? I mean, do you collaborate on all those things?
Well, for instance, the last thing I worked with on with her was actually during quarantine. And I had actually done a live performance for Universal via Zoom. And she was on the call. You know, I had some people from my team, my manager and stuff on the call. And so afterwards she texts me and she's like, hey T, I've been working on this song, or I wanna write a song about what's going on in the world and wondering if you will help me write this song. So I was like, cool, well, you know, call me around 3 or whatever. So we FaceTime and we're just talking, you know, just about, and this was when the whole George Floyd thing first started.
I presume we're talking about I Can't Breathe.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was when the whole George Floyd thing started, and it really kind of totally took me out of my element and her, you know, we were just kind of consumed with this and not really able to even concentrate on anything else. Just sitting down on FaceTime, on Zoom, and just talking about like what's going on in the world, like how it makes us feel, how, you know, we're dealing with it, what can we do. And she had her guitar with her, and she started playing these chords, and I was like, oh, I really love those chords, those sound like really powerful. And then we just started doing what we do, just, you know, line by line, you know, throwing lines off of each other, throwing ideas off of each other. It really just came from, in, you know, a conversation that we were having about how frustrated we were about what's going on in the world. And I think we wrote that pretty quickly. I want to say like, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours maybe. And so then I was like, okay, sing it. So we know what it sounds like. So she, you know, sang it on the guitar, and I was like, wow, that's fire. And I remember at some point when we were writing the verses, she just started singing, doing that I can't breathe. She just started singing that, and I was like, oh, I was like, that's fire. That's like, that's it right there, that's the hook. And yeah, so she's like, cool, I'm gonna record it and, you know, make it sound good or whatever. And then, you know, so I didn't really think much else about it. I thought it was a great song, but, you know, she went home, and I know she recorded it herself out of her house. So and then it came out a few weeks later. So that was kind of how that process went, you know, just kind of bouncing ideas off of each other. And that was, you know, she had her guitar, and sometimes it's just us sitting in the studio and we're listening to beats. We did a song with Hit-Boy I'm honestly not sure what if that song's on the album or not, but it's a really dope song. And we just went in with Hit-Boy. He played us a bunch of beats, and we found a beat that we liked, that, you know, and we just start bouncing line by line, melody by melody off of each other, you know, and it always comes like super easy. It flows super easy working with each other, you know, so.
It almost sounds like you guys could be a group at some point or do a duo album.
I would definitely love to do a, some sort of EP with her, because I really, and I feel like we could put it together so quick too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, before, because I've known her for a really long time. She was like, well, I met her when she was like 14.
Mm.
And she, obviously, before the whole her concept was even thought of. And I just thought she was so dope. I was like, wow, this 14-year-old kid sings like a baby Jasmine Sullivan, and she can play instruments, and she's like, you know, I just thought she was so dope. And so we have the same manager. So I told my manager at the time, I was like, hey, I want to write some songs for her. He was like, go ahead. So I really started working with her, like writing with her pretty early on, you know? So yeah, now it's just something that's just kind of, you know, comes very naturally.
I caught her last summer. She played, I live in New Jersey, but I went to Philly for the Roots picnic. And she played, I think, right before the Roots, or two groups before the Roots. And her last song, as I think she always does, is Purple Rain. And it's like, playing guitar is one thing, but playing that specific guitar solo is like, you know, like you can't just strap on a guitar and sort of strum some chords. Like, that's a pretty specific solo. And I was blown away by how good she is.
It's not regular. It's not regular stuff at all.
And even that Prince tribute that was on TV a couple of months ago before the pandemic, I guess, her, you know, going toe-to-toe with Gary Clark Jr., who's, you know, he's probably one of the best guitar players of the current era. And it's like, wow, she's really talented.
You know, and I'm happy that people see that, you know. I feel like listening to her songs is a different thing than actually, like, seeing her live. Yeah, her songs, they're amazing, you know, and she's really great. And, you know, she can, her song be hitting like emotionally and everything. But when you see her live, you like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's a lot different than anything else that I'm seeing right now.
Sure. When do you remember the first time you heard Slide on the radio?
The first time I heard Slide on the radio, it was actually like a long time. I feel like a long time after Slide had come out.
Mm.
I was in LA, and I think sadly I was having a moment of weakness, and I was leaving the studio, and I was stopped by McDonald's. it's not a regular thing I do, but there was nothing else open. So I was leaving the studio real late, and I was in the McDonald's drive-thru. I hadn't heard it on the radio, and so I heard it, and I was like, oh, dope. And so then, you know, after that, then I started hearing it a lot. So
was it still a thrill that somebody was playing it, you know, without knowing that you were there, you were hearing it, and, you know, all that?
Yeah, for sure. I was definitely like, oh, shoot, you know, because, I mean, with my first hit with Wale, Bad, that was really crazy because I was, you know, still living in Indiana at the time. I hadn't even moved. I wasn't in the industry like that, and I never had any, you know, type of success, really. And so that was really huge because I was like, wow, I can't believe, like, I'm on the radio and they're playing my song on the radio, like, a lot of times a day, like several times a day, like really wearing the song out. So I thought that was crazy and cool. But since then, I've kind of gotten in the habit of, when I write on a song or record a song, I just kind of not forget about it, but I'm just like, okay, on to the next song.
Mm.
And, you know, so then several months later, 6 months later, a year later, when you hear the song on the radio, it's like, oh, like, that's really dope. And so, yeah, that's like something that's really cool.
Sure. So. And have you had the experience of, like, sort of just being somewhere, whether it's a party or in the supermarket or whatever, and a song you wrote is playing, and you can see people grooving to it, and they have no idea they're standing next to the person who wrote it or co-wrote it?
Yeah. Yep. I pulled up to people in the car. I pulled up to people in the car playing Slide, and they're like jamming out, and I'll be like, you know, look at them and nod my head like, yeah, this song go hard, you know. But I like it. I think that's so cool. And a lot of the time I don't even say anything. I don't say anything. But, you know, I've been in Ubers before where they're like playing a Her song that I wrote on, or, you know, at a, you know, party or whatever. So it's pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I know you make your own records as well. I mean, what is the next thing that you have coming up?
Well, I'm actually getting ready to drop a project. I've been recording a lot of music, and I kind of just been holding on to it, I guess, because, you know, with the whole quarantine thing, I didn't really know if it was going to end. Mm-hmm. And now I'm seeing that there's really no soon end date. So I'm just like, all right, let me just do my thing and, you know, put this music out or whatever, and just make some more and drop it. So I'm getting ready to put out another project that I'm excited about. So trying to get those songs mixed and mastered and stuff and get some fire visuals going.
And I know you opened for Her, so I'm guessing, you know, if there was no pandemic, you'd be putting this music out and getting out there and playing.
Definitely. And that was the goal. That's kind of like, you know, why I hadn't dropped music, because I'm like, all right, well, you know, I'm going to put some music out and then, you know, tour around it, do some promo.
So is there anybody, you know, obviously you've written a lot with Her and you do your own stuff and you had worked with Wale early on. I mean, are you, do you put your name out there as somebody who, hey, I'm here to collaborate with people on R&B songs, on hip hop songs, on pop songs, or any kind of songs?
Well, I want to. That's my next step. And actually, over quarantine, I've been writing country songs.
Mm.
Just because, you know, growing up, I wasn't really allowed to listen to, like, I was not allowed to listen to explicit music. MTV was blocked on the TV. You know, I grew up on gospel music and, you know, some country, some, you know, 80s, 90s R&B. But my roots came a lot from, you know, I listened to a lot of contemporary Christian music and gospel music and pop, like 90s pop. I love 90s pop. I know all the pop songs from the 90s. you know, the alternative bands, Nickelbacks, the, you know, all those. I know, you know, all those songs. And so that's the kind of music that I genuinely really like.
Right.
And it's kind of hard to put out that type of music as the artist that I am. So I've just been making songs and, you know, songs that make me feel good, songs that I like. And, you know, now that I'm with Universal, I did my deal with Universal. I'm just going to, you know, send out these pop songs, country songs, and see if I can land them on anybody. So I definitely wouldn't mind doing that.
The thing that I respect about country is that, you know, the song craft is pretty top notch, whether or not I like the songs or the lyrics or the things that they say and the things that they say over and over and over.
Right.
But, you know, like, I mean, these people are good at writing songs. And, you know, I think a lot of them are maybe a little more open-minded than people outside of Nashville would give them credit for. You know, and they're way more open to different types of influences than they would have been 10 and certainly 20 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, those Nashville writers, they're just different.
Yeah.
My friend, Aunt Clemens, he's written on a lot of the new Kanye stuff. He wrote on the new Beyonce. And he told me that he wrote a song with a guy from Nashville over the phone without a melody.
Hmm.
They just wrote down words, like they wrote down all the lyrics and then they came up with a melody afterwards. And I'm like, that's crazy. That's actually really crazy. And,
I feel like Nashville is like what Motown was. It's like these guys show up mm-hmm. that day. They don't, you know, whether it's the musicians or the songwriters, you know, like the mm-hmm. musicians show up like Berry Gordy's old, you know, the guys who he hired. And it's like, yep. We don't know who's coming in today. It'll probably be a big star. And we got to knock out a song before yep. lunch and then a song after lunch. And then we go home. You know, it's like pretty regulated from what I understand.
Yes.
You know, and even the writers are like, you know, they're pretty... They go to work to write songs and, you know, it's a different kind of discipline than I think other musics have. But, you know, I bet you would do really well with that probably.
Yeah, it's fun because, you know, I play guitar.
Yeah.
And I started off playing church songs on the guitar. You know, a lot of stuff I play on the guitar I do play, you know, things that sound R&B-ish on the guitar, but also play things that sound country or very pop on guitar.
Right.
And, yeah, I just like that. I just appreciate so many different kinds of music. And so I just be honestly writing whatever. There's sometimes where I'll get a beat pack and it'll be something just like some really ratchet stuff in there. And I'll write like a rap song, you know, like a ratchet rap song that I may never put out, but you know, somebody may want it.
Right.
Some female rapper. So yeah.
But I mean, everybody has all those different moods. Nobody is like one thing all the time anyway. It's just, you know, some musicians put themselves in the lane where like, this is the thing that I do. But, you know, even someone like Kanye, for everything that people say about him, I mean, some of his songs are really different. You know, I mean, he wrote 4 or 5 seconds with Paul McCartney. That didn't sound like any other Kanye song really before. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like an acoustic guitar. I forgot what other instruments are in it, but it's mostly just acoustic guitar. But I feel like most musicians are much, you know, in the past 10 and 15 years have been so much more open to like, yeah, I'm country or yeah, I'm a rock guy, but like I grew up listening to everything, you know, and I think that's a good thing for music.
And you know who I think, an artist that really made that happen in a big way. By the way, Kanye is my favorite rapper. I'm not voting for him for president. But
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, he is my favorite rapper. And there are a lot of things that I appreciated about Kanye later on.
Yeah.
Like 808s and Heartbreaks. You know, I didn't like that album when it first came out. And then a couple years later, I listened to it and I was just like, this album is actually really genius.
I might have to revisit that because I still feel the same way about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I thought it was really genius. I mean, for like what he was going through at the time, like his wife, I know his mom had just passed around that time. And so I thought, you know, I went back and I kind of understood him more. But one thing I kind of got off track, but one artist I wanted to say that I felt like can really tackle a bunch of different lanes is Drake. Like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Drake, he's really fire. Like, he can come out with the most gutter song.
Yeah.
Talking all this mess.
Yeah.
And then he comes out with a, you know, I need a one dance, got a Hennessy in my, you know, and it like works and it all sounds great. It's never like, ah, no, this sucks. I never heard a Drake song where I said, this totally sucks.
I mean, I was going to say the producer that Kanye worked with, at least at one point, Rick Rubin. I just remember when I think Rick Rubin was the exec producer of My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, which was a number one record. And then the next week or the week before, the number one album in the country was by the heavy metal band Black Sabbath. Rick Rubin produced that. And then Kanye's record, which Rick Rubin produced, knocked it out of the number one spot. And that guy's worked with like the Dixie Chicks and Johnny Cash, but like he produced all the, you know, the best early hip hop records by Run DMC and LL Cool J. And it's like, I guess to him, he just never saw it as like, oh, I do this, so I can't do that. And, you know, to be fair, it's not his face on the album cover or anything like that. But still, he's like, you know, there's no reason why I can't do anything that I want to if we agree we want to work together. And I've always thought that's probably the best way to be. You don't get in a rut that way.
Yeah, and I appreciate the, you know, the diversity. It is different when you're a producer and you're able to cover that many, you know, different genres than an artist because, you know, people want you to be specifically, and I'm just going to say it because I feel like this is the truth, especially if you're like a black artist, people are expecting you to do some type of urban music.
Oh, for sure.
You know, R&B or hip hop, or, you know, they're not expecting you to do rock. And that's why I appreciate these little guys, you know, people call it mumble rap or whatever. You know, I appreciate the kids that are coming out and doing the whole, you know, the Juice WRLD and the XXXTentacion, you know, RIP to him. Like, they're coming out and they're doing, you know, just whatever they want to do. These dudes sound like they're doing like some Sum 41 type vibes, you know? And so I appreciate that they're like, you know, stepping into that lane. But I know particularly with black artists, you're expected to do some type of urban music. So,
no, I mean, I don't, that's absolutely true. And it's, you know, it's a bummer. And I mean, some black people do urban music, but not all do. And that's unfair. And, you know, everybody loses when you sort of put people in a box or put expectations on people like that.
Right. And it's like with urban, with black artists, you kind of have to start off, you have to serve your urban fan base first before you can excel to the pop world, like, you know, Nicki Minaj, for example.
Yeah.
You know, you serve your urban fan base, and then you can move up to pop. You know, you kind of have to like work your way into the pop world. So versus somebody like an artist like Post Malone, which I love Post Malone. I think he's dope. I think he's super dope. And I forgot the dude's name that writes with him, but he's fire.
Right. No, I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Post Malone, you know, his first single, he can come out the gate with, you know, a hip hop song. And then, you know, go ahead and switch back over to rock or, you know, that thing that he does, whatever genre. But it's dope, whatever he's doing. But, you know, that's just an example.
No, you're right. I mean, Gary Clark Jr. came out, you should use him as an example, or even Trombone Shorty. And it's like they're not specifically aimed at an urban or whatever audience, whatever you want to call the audience. And it's like, so it seems like sometimes the industry doesn't know what to do with them, you know, which is a bummer because I've seen both of those guys live. I mean, I saw Trombone Shorty last summer and I felt like it was one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life. That guy just has so much energy and it's like, he's a great musician. He plays trombone and trumpet. What, you know, do you need him to make an urban record or can he just be great? You know, like that's what I thought of him when
I saw
true.
Him. That is 100% facts what you're saying. 100%.
And I feel like that's her probably, you know, when they see her with a guitar, they're like, oh, we don't know what to do with this, which is a bummer also.
Well, you know, with her is because I've worked with her so much.
Yeah.
She can sing literally like any type of song. Any type of song, a country song. Her song Hard Place is one of my favorite songs. And that's like, you know, a super pop song, not super pop, but it's, you know, it's more of a pop song. And, you know, but then she's got like these, all the songs from her volume one that are like these super R&B type, you know, dark vibes. And so, I know she just put out a reggae song. I know she's planning on putting out a reggae EP, you know? So, yeah. So I think she's one of those artists that, and not all artists can do this, but I think she's one of those artists that can, really cover a lot of different genres. If you go to her shows, you just see like a huge mixed crowd of people. You see the young black girls, the young white boys, couples, lesbians, everybody.
I saw Janelle Monáe last summer, and that was kind of the audience as well. It was just like all different kinds of people and just like all having a really good time.
Yeah, she's fire. Janelle Monáe is one of those artists that she just like, she's not trying to find a radio hit.
No.
She's just trying to make whatever type of music she likes, you know, whatever mood she's in for something. She likes to get real weird. She gets real weird.
I mean, I always wanted to like her records and, you know, I always kind of liked them, but Dirty Computer is the one where I'm like, okay, I'm a fan. I'm going to pay $100 to go see her as opposed to like, yeah, I'll check it out on Spotify or whatever. Like, and even though I work in the industry, like I didn't know who I could get a free ticket through or whatever. And I was like, I will spend $100 to see this woman. That'll be worth it. And it was totally worth it.
Yeah, she's amazing live.
Yeah.
She's another one of those artists that she's amazing live. Her visuals are great. Like, she's a star.
I mean, she definitely, you know, I know her and probably you are influenced by Prince. With Janelle Monáe, it's pretty clear that she's influenced by Prince.
Yeah, for
and,
sure.
And I listen to a Prince record every day. Like, I just go through the whole catalog and then start over. Every day I listen to one Prince record. To me, I mean, that's as great as music gets. I mean, obviously not every of his, one of his albums are as great as all of the others, but it's like, he's at least a guy who would never accept, oh, you can't do that kind of song, so don't do it, you know? I really like that about him. I always love that about him. I'm glad I got to see him live. Twice.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah, that was definitely.
When was that?
When he did the music album, Musicology. It was sort of like a really big comeback for him because he had done a bunch of albums that kind of no one cared about. And, you know, his shows were sort of iffy. And so when he put out Musicology, it was like, I'm playing the hits. I'm playing arenas. I'm not going to do these surprise club shows. I'm like doing it the way a star should do it. And he had Larry Graham as his bass player from Sly and the Family Stone. And he had this woman named Candy Dulfer, who's a well-known saxophone player, I guess, in the jazz world. And just his band was incredible. he played almost every hit you could think of, and it was just an amazing show. And I'd seen one of his tours a couple of years before that, which was good, but it was sort of like he played Purple Rain first and only played half of it, you know, and then went into another song. Like on that tour, you could kind of see he had a little bit of an attitude about. And I understand, like, if you're a great artist like him, you might not want to be chained to things from the 80s, but it's like the second time I saw him, I think he didn't look at it that way, and he just sort of embraced, there's a reason why people have loved me for this long, and it's okay to say that those old hits were great, but I also think the Musicology album was good enough that he felt like he could play some new songs and they would hold up next to stuff from like Sign of the Times and Purple Rain and stuff.
So. Yeah. And I think about that too with older artists that, you know, they have songs, they have hits from the 80s and the 90s that people, that's what they came to hear.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they want to hear. They want to hear their favorite songs, their throwback hits. They want to hear that live. And for the artist, it's kind of like, I mean, even for me, Bad is only like, I mean, it's like, what, 8 years old?
Yeah, it's not that old.
it's like 8 years old. And I'm like, you know, people want to, I'm just like, you know, me for myself, I'm like, okay, like, because I'm just, I guess I'm just so like, you know,
you're on to the next.
Yeah. I'm just so on to the next. And, you know, I'm like, you know, I want people to like, you know, fall in love with the new and, you know, or the new stuff, sorry.
That's okay.
But then, yeah, they want to hear Bad, and I get it. But it also is a really good feeling, too, when you bring out those old joints and people are, like, going crazy. Because, like I said, that's what they came to hear.
You know, I didn't know how you felt about Bad and Wale, so I wasn't sure if it would be cool to ask about.
No. You could always ask me about, yeah, you could ask me about that for sure.
Is it bad? I never made love, no, I never did. Would've shown no how to
fly. I mean, so talk about that, because that's the one when you actually got, you know, that's the one that put you on or put you in the game.
Yeah, well, with that was a very interesting experience that happened. I feel like it happened pretty fast. I was actually in college when I wrote that, and I was living in the dorms, and I used to go to the stairway in the dorms and post, you know, record, play my guitar and post YouTube videos of like covers and stuff. And I remember I used to get noise complaints because people would be trying to study and I would be like, you know, really loud in the stairways. And so, I used to like to do, and I still do, I still love to do this. When I was younger, like I said, I couldn't listen to explicit music like that. Hmm. And so my older brother, he's 10 years older than me, but he, you know, he used to listen to rap and Tupac and Biggie and Bone Thugs and Harmony and everything like that. And he used to have like CDs and stuff. And I would get CDs from my friends at school, like burnt CDs, and I'd be listening to all this music on the back of the bus. And there was this song that I heard by Trillville called Some Cut. And it's like that song, it goes, what it is, ho, what's up, can I get in them guts? And so, yeah, it's like super ratchet, super provocative. And that song just it was just hitting so hard for me. I'm like, yo, this is crazy. And it had the Beg squeaks in the background. So I was like, oh, this is hard. So I used to like to take rap songs and teach myself rap songs on the guitar and then sing the lyrics instead of rap them, right, to make it sound like, you know, pretty, like, yeah, more acceptable, I guess. And so I was singing that song on the guitar one day, and I was like, man, I need to come up with like something of my own on this song that's like catchy. And then so I just started, and I just said, is it bad that I never made love, no, I never did. And I just came up with that, like, just off the top of my head. And so I would, you know, sing the Some Cut part, and then I would sing that that part that I came up with. And I was like, that's tight. So I couldn't record it. I wanted to, like, get it on a recording. So I reached out to this this kid that I found on Facebook, and it said that he lived in Anderson, Indiana, which was like, you know, 20 minutes from where I went to college. And he was an engineer producer, and his name's Kelson. Like, we're really good friends now to this day. But he had never done any R&B music. He, you know, he's a kid, white boy from Indiana, plays guitar, bass, drums, you know, rock music, country music, that kind of stuff. So I hit him up and I was like, hey, I have a this song that I want to record. And he's like, okay. So I went over to his house and we record this song. Well, we recorded another song before that called Nikki. That was the first R&B song he'd ever produced. But then I brought him, you know, Bad. And I was like, okay, so I kind of told him how I wanted the song to be, you know, these kind of drums, this type of feel, you know. And so we did that. We recorded it that night. And we listened to the song like 40 times. And we were just looking at each other, like laughing, like, yo, this is fire. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't stop thinking about it when I went home. So anyway, I put it on YouTube. I had known Wale at the time. I had been working with him. I worked with him on a previous mixtape called his More About Nothing mixtape on a song called The Cloud.
Right.
And that's the first song I ever did with him. So I had known Wale for about, I met him sophomore year in college. So I maybe known him for like a year, 2 years. And so I sent him this song. I sent him Bad. And I used to send him and like he wouldn't listen to it, or maybe like he just didn't know if it was dope or not because it was me and I wasn't, you know, anybody. And that happens a lot. Like, you know, people, they just kind of like look over it or whatever.
Yeah. If you're not a name, they don't know if, you know, they really, if you really know what you're doing or whatever, I guess.
Right. Exactly. So, I put it on YouTube and it had like, you know, it was picking up some views on YouTube or whatever. So the guy that was managing me at the time, he told Wale, he was like, yo, man. While he was putting his mixtape together, and he was like, yo, you should really put a verse on this song that Tierra has. And so he finally, you know, kind of put a verse on there, and he just put it on his mixtape. The mixtape had like 33 songs on there, something like that. And I remember when he dropped it, the song, it was like number 6, and he had Janae Aiko on there too.
Hmm.
And the song was like number 6, and it was trending on Twitter, and my name was trending on Twitter. And people were like, people were tweeting like, this is the best song I've ever heard in my life. And I was like, what? Like, that was crazy to me that people, that girls are really on there saying that this is the best song that they've ever heard in their life. And they're like, who is this Tierra Thomas person? And, you know, because, you know, people hadn't heard my voice before. And then one day they just hear like this kind of very raunchy, not raunchy, but provocative hook with this kind of like rusty voice they've never heard before. And, you know, they loved it. And I remember before the song came out, I know they were trying to replace me on the song. But like, I heard Kelly Rowland, I think I heard Cassie, because, you know, I wasn't a name. And it wasn't really popular. It wasn't popular at the time to have a song on the radio and people like didn't know who you were. And so I think they tried to, you know, kind of get me off the song. But I was like, hold on, like, you know, this is my song. So, that's what happened with that. And then they decided to use it as a single. It was so like popular on the mixtape. They used it as a single. And, so yeah, me and Wale, you know, we were falling out around that time. Like even before that, we had fell out a few times, you know, in the course of knowing each other.
Right.
And, yeah, we weren't talking. I'd end up signing with Rico. I signed with Rico Love. And Wale and I were not speaking. And one day I had heard that, I think I heard that there was going to be a Bad remix with Rihanna. Maybe, I think, well, I know Wale called me at some point and told me, yo, he called me after the remix came out. So I think someone told me that there was going to be a Bad remix. And that same day it came out and it had Rihanna on it. And,
wow.
When I first heard it, like my heart dropped because I was kind of like, I think my heart dropped because of the, you know, me and the Wale situation. It was that, you know, I had come out and I'm just like a regular, this regular person that just came out of college. And then I have this beef with Wale, what people really don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but I have this beef with Wale. And then all of a sudden everyone's like saying how, you know, I'm disloyal because I didn't sign with Wale and all this other stuff and blah, blah, blah. And, it affected me.
Yeah.
And so, I don't think it was necessarily the Rihanna thing that affected me. I think I was just like, all of a sudden I'm nobody. And then one day everyone's talking about me, I feel like, you know, so.
That is a weird way to enter the public conversation, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's what it was. And, you know, just me, I was young and I just, you know, cared about, I mean, like I said, that's just very weird. It was very weird.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like somebody from Indiana. And then all of a sudden strangers are like acting like they know my life and like, you know, telling me what to do and, you know, everything else. So anyway, so my heart dropped when I heard the Rihanna, version. And then I thought to myself, because I love Rihanna. I have listened to all of her albums. I think Rihanna makes some of the best albums. I thought to myself, I was like, wait a minute. Rihanna is singing my song. And she sang it like me. Rihanna, whose album I was like listening to when I was going through breakups and all this other stuff. And now she's singing my song. And so like, I was like, okay. That's actually like really badass. So, that's actually really badass. And that's when I realized like, like what the heck? The fact that, so then Wale called me like after the remix came out, cause I think maybe part of him felt a little bad that, you know, he didn't tell me about the remix. Cause you know, me and him, we were cool. You know, we had been cool for a long time. And, so he calls me and he says, what's up? He's like, what's up, Chi-Chi? He said, you want to know how it came about? And he said, I was in the club and the song came on in the club and Rihanna was in the club too. And she looked and she said, I want to sing this song.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, for real? He was like, yeah. And I was like, wow. So, you know, people would say stuff like, oh, Rihanna stole your song. She stole your song. Like, I own that. That's my song. I wrote that song and I have publishing on that song. You know,
I'm doing well off that song. Right,
yeah.
Now.
So the fact that Rihanna even got on that song, you know, Rihanna made me a lot of money off that song.
That's awesome.
You know, and she made it go double platinum and made it do what it do. So I thought that was really crazy that she heard that song and like, I'm like, wow, Rihanna was jamming to my she heard this song and was like, yo, I feel it. And that was pretty dope.
That is a great story.
Yeah.
Well, here's hoping you get to do something with Rihanna, like in the same room at some point.
I want to. That's actually one of my goals. I actually, on her last album that came out, I wrote a song and she ended up cutting it. She cut it. And me and my manager, we were like really hyped up because we thought the song was going to be on the album. And I think last minute, because, you know, she had so many songs and she'd be working on her albums for a long time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the songs that she made in year one, they probably not going to, you know, make the cut after she's been recording for a few more years.
For sure.
I mean, that's what I feel like. So, so I wrote the song and I know she cut it, but it was called Only One.
Mm.
And it didn't make the album. I was really bummed about that because that's one of my goals. I really, really want to write some write something for Rihanna and Beyonce.
Well, you know, I mean, you're on her radar at least, so.
Yeah, if I ever see her, I'm going to be like, hey, I'm the girl, you sang my song, my name's Tierra, you sang my song, and I'm trying to get in the studio, because she seemed like she's cool. She seemed like she's real cool, so.
I've not ever met her, so I couldn't say, but it seems like she wants to work with, like, the cool people who aren't necessarily like the biggest stars. Like she just wants the best record to come out of, you know, a session. So
yeah.
Cool. Yep. Well, man, I hope it happens and it wouldn't surprise me if it did. So I hope to speak to you down the road, Tiara. Thank you so much for giving me this much time.
Thanks for having me. It's been great. Appreciate you.
100 years of radio, 100 years of hit makers.
All right. Thank you to Tiara Thomas for spending so much time with us. Next week, we've got Derek Morgan. Derek Morgan, another guy, you may not know the name, but he co-wrote Megan Thee Stallion's Hot Girl Summer, as well as the Savage Remix, and also Nicki Minaj's Yikes. It's going to be a good one. We'll see you next week.